Well, it's Live Music Friday here on Current State on WKAR. Our guest today is 20-year-old Okemos musician Monty Pride, who has a new album out called Hawthorne Morning Sound. He's accompanied here today by cellist Benji Jung. Let's hear a track called Wordsmith.
So lucid that I could barely think, so distinct, now extinct. My memory lapsed and turned, and I can finally link the pink moon's reflection, a South Pacific connection, just running on fumes en route home from Portland. I'm parallel to you and gone too soon. 3 hours with the grain that already grew. 'Cause I'm floating with affection and I won't leave the summer without learning to ride with the wordsmith's composure. Reservation free, slowing down the sound of my mind stampede. 'Cause I normally can't focus. It's usually not like this. If I pen you a letter, well, I hope that you believe it. Blessed are the impetuous, or thought perpetuous in me. Oh, I know this is treacherous, or thought perpetuous in me. Oh, in me, oh. Blessed are the impetuous, or thought perpetuous.
Monty Pride here on Live Music Friday on WKAR's Current State. The track is called Wordsmith. Monty's accompanied there on cello by Benji Jung. And we will hear more from Monty and Benji throughout the course of the hour and have a little conversation about their music here as well. I'm Mark Bayshore. Later this month, the East Lansing City Council will be hearing recommendations about how to stabilize the city's financial situation. East Lansing faces a roughly $100 million projected shortfall in pension and retiree health benefits. Throughout the year, an 11-member financial health review team has been holding public forums, hearing residents' concerns, and making suggestions. The final meeting is scheduled for Monday, December 12th. Here to talk about what they've heard and determined so far are two members of the East Lansing Financial Health Review Team. Robert Klein is a principal at Great Lakes Economic Consulting and a former state treasurer. Welcome back, Robert.
Thank you, Mark.
And Trish Foster is Chief Operating Officer at CBRE Martin Commercial Real Estate and an East Lansing resident. Hi, Trish.
Good morning.
At your last meeting was Monday of this week, as I recall.
That's correct.
And I know a city income tax was discussed. Describe for us the kinds of comments that you heard, Bob.
Well, I think generally we didn't receive too many negative comments. I mean, some of the students at MSU are somewhat concerned about how it's going to affect them. It kind of depends on, you know, what kind of exemption you have under the income tax. Most cities have like $600. If we go somewhat higher, that might, you know, alleviate some of the students' concerns. I think most people understand, you know, East Lansing is in a pretty difficult financial situation like a lot of cities are, and there are not that many revenue options that are available to cities in this state. we're one of only seven states that only allow the property tax and no other source other than the income tax. And there's only 22 cities that have an income tax. So, I'd say generally no one likes to pay taxes, but I thought there were some technical questions and so forth about how it's going to work. But I don't think it was a real negative attitude toward it, even though I do understand, MSU does have some concerns about it.
Tricia Foster, what did you take from the discussion of specifically on an income tax?
Well, I was not there on Monday, but I've been part of the conversations until then. I was out of state. And so the items that were, I would say, methodically thought through were the type of revenue sources that would be large enough in order to make a difference. And there are only a few. So we have what
but
we
an
have.
But an income tax is one of them.
An income tax is one of them, as well as a Headley rollback. That's another option. And what we're trying to do is balance the needs of Michigan State and the MSU employees, as well as students, with the citizenry of East Lansing that's year-round, and trying to determine from a service standpoint what level of service we can provide with the budget that we're provided with.
For all the non-accountants listening here, Bob, how big a dent could it? I mean, just broadly from 5 miles up, how big a dent could an income tax make?
Well, the estimate is that it would raise $10 million, but we're also proposing that there be about a 5.6 mil reduction in the property tax, which would pretty much cut that in half. Mm. So the net to the city would be about $5 million, which is a pretty significant amount, of course. And the other thing about it is the property tax has been growing at about 1% a year since 2012, since we've kind of hit bottom. And an income tax would probably grow something a little over 4% a year. So there's more growth potential also from the income tax.
Sounds as if a recommendation for a city income tax will be among your final recommendations. Is it fair to ask you that?
Yes,
it is fair. I mean, that will go to the city council to put on the ballot. I mean, it's up to them if they want to put it on the ballot.
Everything you're creating goes to the city council.
That's correct,
right? Are you going to recommend a particular percentage? Do you go that far into it, or do you just say, "Hey, city council, consider an income tax"?
Well, actually, the uniform income tax law provides for a 1% tax on residents and a 0.5% tax on non-residents. You could go lower than that, but you can't go higher. So basically, we're going to say an income tax, and we're going to say 1% and 1.5%, which is the standard. The city's council could change that if they want to.
Was that a difficult topic to broach, or did you know from the outset, Trish, that you'd be debating an income tax?
Very difficult. I don't think anybody wants to pay more than their fair share of taxes ever, including myself. However, I bought my home in 2000, and with the crash, my value now above the crash is double. But I'm not paying necessarily my fair share of property taxes, right? Because the value isn't captured because of Headley. You can only increase property tax values by a certain amount. And that's a significant dollar value.
And Headley's already pretty high.
So you have that. You have the fact that the budget in the cuts that have been made, there's very few other low-hanging fruit that can be grabbed. We would have grabbed it otherwise. And so now it's time to make a dent if we want to keep our infrastructure moving in the right direction.
It's going to make the city less attractive to some number of outsiders. That's not going to escape outsiders' attention.
I don't think that is that big a problem. I mean, 1% is not that much. I don't think there's any strong evidence that it's a major deterrent. So I'm not too concerned about that. But let me just say, in East Lansing has cut their budget about 6% since 2008. And they've reduced the number of employees by about 25% over the last decade. So, a lot of Michigan cities are struggling. Cities are doing a pretty good job of cutting expenses. But you get to the point where, if you cut too much, nobody wants to live in your city. So you got to balance, the revenue and the cuts.
Robert Klein is a principal at Great Lakes Economic Consulting and a former state treasurer. Trish Foster is chief operating officer at CBRE Martin Commercial Real Estate and an East Lansing resident, and they are both members of East Lansing's Financial Health Review Team, about to make recommendations to the East Lansing City Council about how to about the financial future of the city and how to shrink a pretty significant deficit, primarily focused on retiree health benefits and pensions. How will the team arrive at its final recommendations? Will you be conducting a vote, or is all of the voting here done by the city council?
No, we do conduct a vote. So okay. Internally, we've been divided into six subgroups, which we all participate on. And those subgroups make recommendations to the overall financial health team. And we have to have approval from the subgroups before it can go to the overall financial health team. And then the overall financial health team votes on what those recommendations are and approves, modifies, et cetera. And eventually the final recommendations after December 12th will go to the full council.
It begs a question about the process here, though, that I want to ask. Is your group's job, has it been to put every option available in front of the city council, or is it your job to actually eliminate some options that you think are flawed for some reason?
Well, it's our job to eliminate options that are flawed. We're not going to recommend something to the city council that we don't think is going to work or has problems. Mm-hmm. So we just recommend those things that we think make sense, and we'll address the problem.
Is there anything more to say about the Headley Amendment override? I know that's on the agenda here.
Well, I should say, you know, the city, the charter allows up to 20 mills. But because of the Headley override, you know, when your revenues, property revenues increase faster than the rate of inflation, you have to lower the millage rate. So the millage rate now is, I think, about 17.6 or 7 mills. So it would have to be put on the ballot to say to put it back up to 20. That would raise about $2.2 million. So that is something that we're going to tell ask the city council, recommend the city council consider. And but we don't think they should put both the income tax and the Headley roll up on the ballot at the same time. It'll be up to them to decide how they want to stage it. Mm.
You're still scheduled to create what I assume are some of your thorniest recommendations of all, and those involve retiree health care. This has been an issue for a long time, though. What can you share about that, Trish?
Well, it's been an issue for a long time, but I think the primary concern was addressed years ago with the way that the city negotiated and renegotiated existing contracts so that the same, I would say, fruitful benefits package no longer exists. So we're dealing with more of a legacy situation than a current situation. The current situation has been addressed. However, as we all know, you can put the appropriate amount in a retirement fund. I did in my 401k for 2000 through 2016. And 2007 through 2012, it was a little challenging. We didn't meet the type of returns that were planned. So when you don't meet the planned returns, even though you're contributing, you have a larger problem than you would have otherwise. And that's where we're at right now.
Let's talk about healthcare specifically, though, here. The larger trend around the country continues to be more expensive healthcare. Do you anticipate deductibles and co-pays, those kinds of things, will go up for city retirees?
Well, we're not specifically recommending that. So that would kind of be up to the city council. We're recommending some cost savings. Looking at possibly having certain employees pay a larger share of their healthcare. There's also some legislation out of the state that could have some impact on what's going to happen. So the city's already done so much. There aren't that many more things that we can do that are going to save that much money. So,
what was on the table before the financial health team? Let me rephrase. What have you heard or thought here in 2016 that hadn't been considered previously? I mean, Had anyone had a serious discussion of a city income tax, for example, prior to the establishment of the team?
I think it's been talked about, over the years, but I'm not sure that there's real serious consideration until the financial health team started looking into it, and we had Plant Moran conduct a study of the income tax, As far as I know, this is the first real serious consideration that in quite a while, anyway.
Is there a minimum retirement age right now at the city?
I don't know exactly what the retirement it's different for police and fire and for regular employees. I'm not sure the exact exact age.
Typically, what comes up in these discussions is bumping the minimum retirement age so that people are they're not drawing benefits as early as they had in the past.
I don't think we're not talking about changing that at this point in time. I know that's an issue. I mean, police and fire, it's a particular issue because, I mean, their jobs are difficult, and when they reach a certain age, it gets pretty difficult, to perform those kind of jobs. It's a little different for maybe regular employees in the city, but that's not something that we're recommending any change in.
Discussions about infrastructure have been part of the team's discussions as well. Remind our listeners how infrastructure fits into this conversation, Trish.
Well, we all use infrastructure, right? If we're using water and sewer at our homes and our businesses, and we're driving on roads and we're looking at lights and trees, that's infrastructure. And when you have a deficit in your budget, guess what you don't spend money on? You do not spend money on predictive and preventative maintenance. And we all know that everything has a useful life, whether we as humans or the infrastructure that we utilize. So you have to maintain it. And if you can maintain it, you can extend the useful life. When you spend a significant amount of time being unable to maintain it because the budget dollars aren't available, you have to make that up in some way. And that's why we're having that conversation today.
Last Sunday, the State Journal's editorial emphasized the importance of East Lansing working with MSU, and it alluded to a disagreement apparently over costs that the city incurred for services that it provided for the university. That was, I don't know the details, but that's what it said. And the university apparently doesn't feel that it should have to pay them, presumably because of the huge economic impact of Michigan State. At least that's what the editorial suggests. Is that a serious issue, Robert Klein?
Well, I think it's a serious issue. We had a study that was done that looked at the cost that the city incurs because of MSU. I think the bottom line came out to about $3.8 million. Of course, we acknowledge that MSU is incredibly important to the city of East Lansing, and it provides tremendous economic benefits. But still, I think it is an issue. The university does pay for some costs and for fire protection and so forth. But basically, the amounts paid, don't nearly cover the cost. So I think it's something we want to have a conversation with the university about. The city does have quarterly meetings with MSU officials. And I think at the next meeting, they're going to bring this up and they're going to discuss the study and see what kind of an arrangement can be worked out with MSU. It would be helpful if the university could at least increase what they're paying a little bit for those costs. Mm. So, the other issue that no one really talks about is that, the city of East Lansing, their tax bill value per capita is about $19,500. The average for the cities in the state is $30,000. This is the tax base that you levy your mills on. So it kind of determines how much property tax you get. And, one reason for that that it's so low is because we don't have any major manufacturers, and of course, the largest employer, MSU, doesn't pay property taxes. So that's also a consideration that we have to take into account.
You mean incentivizing some manufacturer to come to East Lansing?
Well, no, I'm not.
Not necessarily manufacturer, no. But some
well,
business.
I'm not necessarily talking about that. I'm just talking about the situation is that East Lansing, their tax base is relatively low compared to a lot of cities. So that does create a fiscal problem for the city.
Are you confident going into what you're going to submit to city council here, Tricia?
Confident, yes, because there aren't many alternatives. Am I super excited about it? No. But I do want to have the same level of service that I'm currently getting, and I want our city to continue to improve and grow and expand and be that place where everybody wants to work and visit and live, and that requires dollars.
The final meeting of a public meeting here scheduled for the financial health review team in East Lansing, Monday, December 12th. I believe that's in the afternoon at the Hanna Community Center. Our guests have been members of that team. Robert Klein, a principal at Great Lakes Economic Consulting and a former state treasurer. Trish Foster is chief operating officer at CBRE Martin Commercial, RE, and a resident of East Lansing. Thank you both. Robert, you got one more. Quickly, please.
I just want to say, I think this has been an excellent process. A lot of dedicated people have spent a lot of time doing this. I think, you know, Mike Mokwin, the chairman, has done an excellent job of organizing this. It's been very transparent. And, you know, I think it's going to produce a pretty good result for the city of East Lansing.
It's been great hearing from both of you. Thanks for carving out
Thank
time
you.
For us here today. It's Current State's Live Music Friday here on WKAR. Monty Pride is our special guest here today. He's accompanied by cellist Benji Jung. Let's hear a track called Bedridden.
Got a tank full of gasoline, crawl space of things that I might need. You were right, the siren body left me counting digits on a tombstone of someone unknown. We're losing moonlight. Oh, your eyes right. Reconciled in this hand, plaza haze. I'll drink to the place you'd rather be. My lighthouse be my actions unseen. Oh, in an eerie morning, wave a rocky mountain high. I'm a bedridden Midwestern.
Monty Pride performing live in Studio S here on Current State's Live Music Friday. The track is called Bedridden. It's from his latest CD, his new CD, Hawthorne Morning Sound. You can catch Monty live on Sunday at the Avenue Cafe, East Michigan Avenue in Lansing, starting at 8 p.m. More from Monty Pride and Benji Jung coming up on Current State. I'm Mark Bayshore. Glad you could join us today. They say that every dog must have its day. This weekend, some will get two. About 1,500 dogs and their owners or handlers are coming to East Lansing to compete for the coveted Best in Show title at the MSU Pavilion. The Winterland Classic Cluster Dog Show is hosted by the Ingham County Kennel Club and attracts entries from across the U.S. and Canada. Current State's Kevin Lavery spoke with two club members, its president, Mark Yeager, and secretary, Vicki Bovey. They were both busy setting up behind the scenes with just one canine companion on site, Polar, a fluffy white Bichon Frise.
We have the dog show here every year, and we will have approximately 1,500 dogs entered on Saturday, and then normally they're the same ones that kind of hold over for Sunday, but that's what we average out.
Now, when you watch the granddaddy of all shows on TV, the Westminster Kennel Club show, which happens every February, you see them running around with their owners, their masters or trainers. And to the untrained eye, you might not really know what goes into that little trot around the stage. What types of things would we go into good dog training, and what things are judges looking for?
Well, the judges are looking for the confirmation of that breed, of that particular breed. And what you usually see on TV is what we call group judging. But prior to that, these dogs compete against their own breed first. And then the best of their breed goes into the groups. And that's where what most people see, you know, on TV. And then one from those groups go on to Best in Show. This will happen the same thing here for Saturday and Sunday.
We have the standards that are set for that particular breed. And before we can judge at that level, we have to have studied them quite extensively and really gotten to know what they're supposed to be like. And we're looking for which of those dogs comes closest to the absolute perfection that their standard calls for on that particular day. So it's a little bit subjective because you can weigh things a bit differently. Even if you have a point scale that there's 35 points for what the head is like and another 30 points for how the body is put together, you sit there and you say, well, this one really gets about 30 points on the head but only 25. And you start to balance that off, and eventually you come up with this one for me today. That's the one that is really saying to me, I am a German Shepherd, and nobody should ever ignore me.
Okay, so those are some of the physical characteristics.
Right.
You're looking for the quintessential features of the breed. But every dog has its own personality, and you want personality to come through, and you're laughing here.
Well, they will sometimes make us look really foolish when we're out there
they
with
make
them.
They make you humble. I mean, yes. I've shown for many years, and I love showing puppies, and it does. It will give you a humbling experience when you show a puppy especially, but
right.
Yes.
Okay, now you've done it. Horror stories on the runway, if that's the word for it.
Oh, yeah. There would be several stories you could tell. So, yes. And especially, like I said, I used to show puppies for my breeder. And they will make you humble.
Well, there was one day down at the Detroit Kennel Club. She was showing one of our dogs for us because Karen and I were both in the ring with other dogs. And Chelsea just spun like
the
a little
ring.
Black tornado the whole time. Now, she won, but it was like, wow, this dog is not paying any attention to Vicki. She's just,
She was just twisting all the way around the ring. We weren't walking straight. We weren't gating. We were just turning, making circles all the way around the ring.
Twisting like Toto.
That's right.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Right.
What's really the appeal of a dog show? So many people love dogs, but what is it that makes someone sit through round after round as a novice, appreciating each dog?
I don't know that novices can really appreciate. They more tend to have a single breed that they're really interested in, and they really want to get in touch with that particular breed. And it's after that that we started to branch out. Like when I started, Bull Terriers were the ugliest dogs in the world to me. And now if I see a good egg-shaped head on a Bull Terrier, I almost cry because it's so beautiful. Yeah. But you really have to, it takes time to get into it.
You start with your own breed. I mean, everybody starts with their own breed and works their way through. But what we try to do here, though, we advertise, and we want to get the public in here because this is the excellent place for these people that are looking for a dog or want to see information on dogs to talk to the breeders, talk to the handlers. You know, and on Saturday at noon, we clear out two rings. We have exhibitors donate their time and bring their dog into the ring, sit down, and the public will go in and talk to them. I mean, we call it Meet the Breeds.
Right.
And you go in just like you and I are sitting here talking. And we talked about the dog, and they, you know, and they get that contact. And this is what we're trying to do for the public, too.
Yep.
We want these dogs to be in good homes, and this is a good public education.
We're talking with Vicki Bovee, who is the secretary and cluster chair for the Ingham County Kennel Club, as well as Mark Yeager, the president of the Ingham County Kennel Club. We're talking about the dog show that is taking place this weekend at the MSU Pavilion. This is now in its 25th or so year.
Well, actually, the club itself is getting close to being 100 years old.
Yeah. Because we had 75 years, quite a few years ago, we celebrated our 75th year. So we're probably close to 85 years, maybe?
None of our founding members are with us anymore, although some of them were still alive when I joined back in the mid-70s.
Yeah.
It's a long time been here in the Lansing area. The Civic Center was our venue until it got torn down, and then we kind of went around for a few years until this place opened. And this is really a great place to come and watch a dog show. The aisles are wide, and the grooming space isn't... One of the problems with Westminster, frankly, if you're there, the aisles are tiny. The crowds just make it impossible to get around and see everything. You know?
Well, and they've changed the venue, too, because now they're on the piers. Yeah. But here also, 3 days we have in the arena, the Agility Club joins us. We have them come in and join us for the weekend. So we've got agility running all 3 days.
Right.
So you can set up in the stands and watch those dogs go through those tunnels and over the teeter-totters and down everything. And that's really fun to watch.
What do you learn about a dog's breeding from an agility course?
Well, first of all, you learn how well you can educate them and then how much fun they have with it. Because if you really want to see dogs enjoying themselves, that's the place to see it. Because those dogs just, they live to be out there and running through that course. It's amazing to see. We had one a few years ago. We didn't show her. We bred her. And she would, for instance, run a minute and a half course. The normal time when it was a minute and a half, she'd be through it in like 26 seconds. And that's a little 6-pound Brussels Griffon. It was amazing to see.
Yeah, it's nice to see them. So, I mean, that way you can sit in the stands and watch that. And that's once you're in the door, you have the access to all of this. We have a lot of nice vendors. It isn't just dog people that, you know, are out there. We've got all kinds of vendors for, you know, the public and everything. So It's a good area for the family just to watch the dog shows.
2-day event, and each show is its own event unto itself. So if your dog goes through its paces and wins best in show on Saturday, that's not the end. There could be a whole different dog that wins the next day.
That's right, because we start this all over again Sunday morning at 8:00. So we work our way through all the breed competition down to the groups, the 7 groups, and then the one in each of those 7 groups then goes on to best in show. So we do this both days.
Vicki and Mark, is there a singular moment in all your years of doing this where you saw the alpha dog, you saw, you know, man of war, and something that sticks in your mind about the ultimate dog?
Well, for me, it's got to be the German Shepherd Manhattan. Hatter was just amazing to see him out there with Jimmy Moses going around the ring. Watching him at the Garden was just... it took your breath away. And the connection between those two was just something to see.
What made this dog so special?
Well, number one, he was probably the best German Shepherd that was ever bred. But Jimmy had him in such great condition, and Jimmy himself was in good enough condition to keep up with Hatter, which was not an inconsiderable feat in itself. But just to watch the two of them going around there, just literally floating around that ring, just could bring tears to your eyes.
You have a seminal moment for you, Vicki?
Not really. I'm around dog shows so much. I mean, there's just so many of them. It's They're all good. Everybody has their day.
Right.
I enjoy the dog world.
So let's talk about the particulars. When does the event begin on Saturday, and how do people come down to get involved?
We begin here at the pavilion at Farm Lane. We start at 8:00. Gate opens up, the public, we have admission. It's $5 for adults, $3 for children
and seniors.
And
$12 for families.
Yep, $12 for families.
And inghamcountykc.org is our website. And we have links to the schedules if you want to see when the breeds you're interested in are going to be shown.
Mark Yeager is president of the Ingham County Kennel Club, and Vicki Bovey is its secretary and cluster chairman. We've been talking about the Winterland Classic Cluster Dog Show taking place at the MSU Pavilion this weekend. Mark and Vicki, best of luck. Thanks for talking with me today.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you for having us.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
And Friday means live music here in Studio S from WKAR's Current State. Monty Pride is our special guest here today. He's accompanied on cello by Benji Jung. Let's hear a track called Reasons.
Why did music play on Friday? And why have I yet to make sense of why you were here and I was still back there, still blurry and sadly content? I've got a million reasons and I don't know half of them. The way you were better left in a dream catcher somewhere, a subconscious blank stare, flying circles around my head. But this firefly's fleet, and it's lit and it's longing to be at peace again. Just don't stop your rambling, your loving and your traveling, your heart. Sleep deprivation in the heat of the day drove me straight to the lake. Well, I wanna be back there, I wanna be somewhere to stop distraction from taking its place. See if the moon is willing and those stars understand me. You can still hear me. I'll take the chance to be near you, to ride you, to see you, to stare into your eyes all day. I've got a million reasons and I believe half of them. I'm finding the words that I left in knowing without saying. Intuition's golden, ingrained in the life that you've led. See, I'm running with affliction, engulfed in affection, and I'm sorting out these things that I've said. Just don't stop your rambling, your loving and your traveling. Keep this close in market. Well, it might drive me crazy, it might leave me aching, asking the same questions again. But with countless reasons and the time we're allotted, there's nothing left to expect. I've got a million reasons and I don't know half of them. I'm finding the words that I left. Just don't stop your rambling, your loving and your traveling. Your heart can't be kept. ¶¶
Monty Pride performing Reasons, Benji Jung on cello there here on Current State's Live Music Friday, part of a new CD from Monty Pride. You're coming off a pretty hot performance, I guess. You sold out the Robin Theater to release your CD. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it was an incredible experience. I'm so grateful for everyone's support and everything.
A lot of energy in the room that night?
There was, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful night.
That's fantastic. We'll point out that Monty plays next at the Avenue Cafe in Lansing, starting at 8 p.m. on Sunday night. Hawthorne Morning Sound. You grew up on Hawthorne Street in Okemos, is that right?
I did, yep.
Hence the title. Is there a thematic unity to the songs on this CD? Is that something you take into consideration, or is it just a collection of related songs?
There's definitely a theme through the album. It's really focused on nostalgia and just, sentiment of home, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote most of the album at home when I was staying there this past summer, back in my childhood home, and just being in that space and writing there, it really brought back a lot of memories. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
There's a real confessional quality to your songs.
I take it they're
drawn from real life situations, or do you ever in your songwriting just fantasize? Do you ever just create imaginary characters you've never met before?
I try to stay honest in the songs. It can be fun, and I have written just kind of made up a few things. A Gypsy Dance is one of those songs on the album, but for the most part, yeah, they're based off experience. And it was kind of interesting. I'd listened to the song so many times and played them through the recording process. I'd kind of lost track of what they meant to me and what I was actually saying and writing about.
Oh, I know exactly. Yeah, sure.
And it kind of hit me the day after the show. Like, I'm glad it didn't hit me during the show, because that might not have been the best. They're definitely
super. That wouldn't have been good.
No. They're super personal.
No, that's an interesting point that you make, though. I mean, I think even those of us who don't perform music, you find yourself just saying words after a while. You say, what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything anymore, but they do. They do, but you forget about the meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, to that. You're currently a third-year student in MSU's Community Sustainability Program. What kinds of things do you study in that?
Mainly just a lot of things about natural systems and how they relate to human activity, I guess. And basically just trying to, the main goal, I guess, is to attempt to save the planet if we can from just everything that we're doing to harm it, I guess.
Will you try to make music a full-time endeavor at some point once you're out of school, or do you intend to keep it as a sidelight?
No, I definitely plan to try to do it full-time once I complete the program. So,
Benji Jung, tell us about yourself. How'd you become a cello player? When did that start?
I became a cellist I wanted to be an opera singer when I was young, but when my voice changed, I started playing another instrument to keep up good sounds, and really took off and studied. I started playing when I was 11 and began competing throughout high school and moved to Memphis to study with a wonderful cellist down there.
Mm. How did you two connect?
We actually met at the Broad Art Museum. I was performing there for their new and student performance series. And Benji was just in the coffee shop area, and you heard me. And then we just met from there, and we kind of lost track of each other and didn't talk for maybe 6 months. And then I found out he played cello while I was recording the album, so I reached out. Yeah.
Yeah. Turns out he took a risk on whether or not I was good. He'd never heard me before. I just showed up and started playing.
Well, you compliment the sound really well. I mean, it's a rich emotional kind of sound a cello can have, to be sure. I feel funny asking a 20-year-old about some of his early influences, but it's still pretty early in your life. But tell us about some of your influences. We'll leave the early out of it.
Yeah. For guitar playing, I'm really inspired by the tallest man on earth, Christian Mattsson. He's a Swedish folk singer who writes in English. He's by far my biggest inspiration.
Tallest man on earth?
Yeah, yep.
That's a band or that's a
It's just an artist.
That's
he tours
a guy.
With the band.
Oh.
Just a guy, yeah.
Okay.
It's his moniker. But also Simon and Garfunkel became a big influence on this album. And I think some of that vintage sound and just that vibe kind of came through in the recordings. And I didn't necessarily intend for that, but I'm glad it's there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Simon Garfunkel, you know, obviously, you know, Bob Dylan and Townes Van Zandt, all those classic songwriters, they've inspired me, yeah.
Benji, what do you try to add to Monty's songs? Or do you collaborate on songwriting? Let me ask you that.
I don't collaborate on the writing. As far as words go, those are all him. But for music, you know, he'll just show up at my apartment or something and show me what he has, and I'll listen to it, and then I'll sort of play a little bit. But honestly, it's not as... There's a really open quality to his music that's really easy to fit within, and also his relationship with the music itself is very it's very clear and honest. And I feel like I'm not really adding anything so much as I'm sort of helping him to explain what he's trying to communicate.
Okay. Monty Pride is our Live Music Friday guest. You just heard from his cellist, Benji Jung. Monty's a singer-songwriter out of Okemos, and again, he'll be performing at the Avenue Cafe this Sunday evening starting at 8 p.m. Songs from his new CD called Hawthorne Morning Sound. A recent story on you in the Lansing City Pulse starts off with the story from when you were just 5 years old and you were attending a Mystic Shake show in town. And I've seen Mystic Shake, Ben Hassinger and company, and Dick Rosemont, and you requested a song from an album of theirs, and they played it, and now Mystic Shake guitarist Ben Hassinger opened your show at the Robin Theater. Do we have that right?
He did, yep. Yeah, it was a super special performance. I was so grateful that they were willing to play. You know, Ben's always growing up and, like, learning how to play music and just playing around town. He's always been like a mentor kind of, and like a musical uncle. I think that's the language they used in the press and stuff. But I totally agree with it. It's just, he's always been an amazing influence. The whole band, really, Mystic Shake, is what really got me into music. Like, they were my first concerts I went to. They were my first band I like followed and enjoyed listening to. And yeah, they inspired me to pick up a guitar in the first place. So,
is Monty Pride your real name?
It is, yeah. I get that quite a bit. But yeah, my full name's Monty Aaron Pride II. Some people know me by Aaron, just because I've went by my middle name for part of my life. But yeah, it's
the real thing.
It is.
What do you like about playing with a cellist in particular? I mean, Have you considered a larger band, playing with a larger band, or is your song, I mean, your songs are awfully intimate. They're acoustic driven, obviously. Have you ever played in front of a bigger ensemble?
Yeah, I have. I've played with kind of a small full band with a drummer and a piano player before, but in doing that, that offers something really unique. But I've found, like you said, they are really intimate, personal songs, and I think the cello, the duo like aspect, it just adds exactly what the songs need, just like you said, some depth, and just the combination with an acoustic guitar, there's something really
it's
special
pretty rich.
About it.
No, I totally agree. I think a lot of people would agree with you.
And Benji's playing is just amazing too, and improvisation is just incredible. So,
do you feel like you're still both growing as players, as a guitar player? Do you, Monty, feel like you're still getting better?
Oh yeah, definitely. There's always room for improvement. I'm still working at it. Definitely.
Benji, what about you?
It's a mixed question. I think on the one hand, I'm not growing as much technically as I have in the past, simply because I'm not a full-time music student anymore, and I'm not competing, you know, at the level that I had decided to classically. But I'm growing as a musician, and I'm growing with my understanding of the cello at a very different and more, I think, abstract and personal level. That's really helping me to, you know, make better music, which I guess would say that I am growing.
And you're from Zealand originally. You studied in Memphis. in the past,
correct? Well, I studied, growing up, I studied in Chicago and in Grand Rapids and Zeal and Kalamazoo, but I went to university in Memphis and studied with a Brazilian cellist named Leonardo Garcia.
Very good. Well, it's been very special to have both of you here today. Monty Pride has been our Live Music Friday guest, along with cellist Benji Jung. See Monty and Benji Sunday at 8 p.m. at the Avenue Cafe. His new album, Hawthorne Morning Sound, can be found on Bandcamp and on iTunes along with At His Show. We're going to have these two great guys play us out here after I remind you that Monday on Current State, have you thought about what to buy the jewelry lover in your life this holiday season? Consider the lovely Spartan Agate, a man-made gemstone made from the thick layers of paint applied over many decades at the Rock on MSU's campus. We'll talk to the jeweler who makes them to find out how she did it. That and lots more Monday on Current State. Monty Pride, Benji Jung, play us out here on Current State. We hope everybody has a great weekend.
I can feel the dark of the downstairs as heat lightning sparks the sky. With your eyes bright like accordions, dilating in tonight. My mug was half full of Maxwell in the morning, so I wouldn't spill on the drive. And I'm sure you can read my mind, dear, on a wavelength right, a wavelength right with sounds your house makes as it's aching past midnight. And I've memorized the